recording, boss. So this is another episode of Better, Worse, or the Same. And today we have Christina Farrell, nurse practitioner.
Farrell,
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Welcome to the show. So I am familiar. Well, I met you when we started working at urgent care setting in the Midwest. But tell me a little bit about your background.
So I have been in healthcare for 19 years. I started out as a CNA and became a nurse and worked in an emergency department for the Portland metropolitan area of Oregon, and proceeded on to my nurse practitioner.
So how long were you in the emergency room as a nurse before you became a nurse practitioner?
I transitioned from floor nursing. So 5 years,
5 years
in the emergency department, 7 years total as a nurse
before you became a nurse practitioner. So one of the things that motivated me to bring you onto the show is kind of this misperception of what exactly nurses do and what they bring to the table when they go into nurse practitioner school. And what motivated me was a number of articles that I'd read, and they would compare education between physicians, PAs, and NPs. And what I found was the vast majority of the time, if it seemed that the articles would downplay the training that nurse practitioners would get. And to be fair, my training as a nurse practitioner was 750 hours of hands-on training outside of the classroom. So this is clinical training. And that is less than a PA would get. I think PA is around 1,000 hours, maybe 2,000 hours. And a physicians, oh my God, they cannot help but tell themselves 20,000 hours. Like, God bless them. But what is so interesting is that in those articles, they would never talk about what a nurse brought to the table, because a PA doesn't necessarily have to have, they have to have medical background, but that could be medical background in the sense of they were, you know, they worked in a school athletic training department. They don't necessarily have to have hands-on work, hands-on experience. So if you could speak to that a little bit, what do you think a nurse brings to the table, you know, and what does nursing education and experience entail?
So I think the biggest thing is we have that experience at the bedside. Right. So even as a CNA, you learn what things make you say, oh, this is something that needs to be addressed now. You take it to the nurse. Right.
Sure.
The nurse then does something further that you as a CNA did because they've been trained to and they know what they're looking for.
Sure.
And then they take those findings to the physician. Right. So when they take those findings to the physician is not even there. They're not looking at the patient. The nurse is the one that's looking at the patient. And essentially, it's those, that subconscious mind that's telling you something's not right here.
Sure.
And whether you can put it together and figure it out for the physician, great. And if you can't, then you're working with that physician to be able to figure out what you need to do to find out what's wrong with your patient. That ultimately is a tool that you bring forward as a nurse practitioner. Is so that critical thinking level.
From your nursing experience.
Correct.
What does nursing education entail? I mean, I remember I had a medical director tell me that a nurse essentially learns how the hospital works, which was absolute crap. I was shocked that he said this, but tell me a little bit about your nursing education.
Yeah, so in my education, I actually did an associate's degree in nursing.
Sure.
Initially, and then went on for my bachelor's. But with an associate's degree, I was taught that you need to be one step ahead of the physician. You need to be thinking what the physician may be thinking. So when you're looking at your patient, you have to be looking at their condition and be able to put the pieces together to take forward.
Sure.
And essentially assist that physician in their care for that patient. You're there with that patient. You're there with their family. You're able to put those pieces together that the physician can't necessarily do.
Yeah, not because they're not able to do that, but
but
let's change it. The healthcare provider, this could be a PA or an NP that's also treating these patients in the hospital.
Yes, now. Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. But
back then, no.
These individuals are very much trained to do this, but they aren't at the bedside.
Correct.
Right? So they have the critical thinking to do this, but they're just not there.
Correct.
I would say that a nursing education, by and large, gives you a very good, broad base in human health.
Very good and very broad.
And not as deep, not correct, as deep as a physician, correct, not as deep as a physician assistant, and correct, not as deep as a nurse practitioner, but you have a very good foundation.
Absolutely.
I loved it with COVID. There was not a call for hospital administrators. We realized like, oh shit, we don't need these people now. Get out. There was not a huge call for advanced practice providers, nurse practitioners, PAs, physicians. It was by and large nurses. Mm-hmm. And I love to see that now nurses are kind of striking and saying, this isn't, you need us. You treat us poorly. Explain a little bit about why that was during COVID. What do nurses do in the hospital? We talked a little bit about how they're one step ahead of the medical provider, but what do they actually do? The hands-on that a physician actually can't really do very well.
So they're working with that patient. When you're working with that patient, you're listening to them.
Sure.
You're listening to what they have to say. And as a nurse, you are actually evaluating them. You're taking vital signs. So you're not only seeing the physicality of them and what essentially your assessment as a nurse is showing you, mm-hmm, but ultimately you're also taking their mentation into account as well.
Sure.
And when we look at somebody's mentation and how they're coping, that can actually affect really how well they're going to heal,
sure,
or how well they're going to end up overcoming whatever disease or ailment in which they have. So you as the nurse are able to take those pieces and put them together and essentially say, this treatment is not working.
Sure.
Because we need to make a change.
Right in the moment.
Correct.
And I would argue that a physician can do this, but their job is not set up for this.
Correct. They're not there.
No, yeah. And it's not a cognitive issue or an intellectual issue. It's more of a, I remember when I was in a hospital, I would have to be with that patient from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. and I would be with them probably 3 to 4 hours straight during that shift.
Yeah.
I remember the physician or NP or PA, whoever it may be, would come in. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is what we're going to do. Bye. And they would leave. And yep, then you were stuck with them. And so if the patient continued to complain about pain, you had to get really creative. And there was this skill that I would argue that most nurses develop where they can, you learn how to be with someone in a moment of medical crisis.
Right.
And you learn how to manage that medical crisis, mm-hmm, in a vastly different way. I wouldn't say better or worse, but in a different and especially unique way that PAs and physicians don't get.
Yeah, absolutely. We're dealing with these people when they are most vulnerable. And when you have that healthcare provider who's only coming in to make changes to whatever the, mm-hmm, treatment plan may be, they're in there for a split second. Yep.
So tell me a little bit about the... Give me some of the sexy things that nurses do. Not in the provocative nurse thing, but everybody has this idea that the physicians are putting... I remember I was a nurse practitioner and we were in a clinic. This is back in New Mexico. The patient was crashing in the urgent care. And I called the doc and I said, I need help with this patient because I needed extra hands. And I start to put an IV in the patient and she looks at me and she's like, are you good at this? Should I have the doc do this? And I lost my mind. It's like, oh my God, why did I lose my mind?
I mean, honestly, when was the last time that the doc who's treating that patient, right, who is on that patient's care team,
sure,
actually inserted an IV, yep, right? I saw this in the emergency department, right? So many of the times that a patient is crumping, we are the ones as the nurse putting in that IV, putting in the IO, essentially getting access while the physician is then putting in orders and trying to figure out where we're at, you know, in timeline, sure, to be able to go to the next step, yeah, of our, you know, ALS algorithm,
sure,
right? Advanced life support algorithm, yeah, or what have you, whatever it is that we're working on. You know, even when somebody has a heart attack, you're looking at essentially this algorithm and did I do everything that I needed to do to get this person to the cath lab? That's where they're at. I'm trying to execute everything.
You're actually at the problem.
Correct.
And that's the thing that I don't think people understand is the nurses are actually in the blood and guts.
Yes.
Putting in the needles, putting in the lines. You know, and granted, you still have advanced nurses who can put in the PICC lines. You have NPs, PAs, or physicians putting in chest tubes. You know, the physicians still do interventions. I don't want to give that impression that they don't. But by and large, you need someone who's in it all the time to do it. I remember we were at this, we were at church. It was funny. And I had hurt my knee because I'm hurting myself all the time. And this is a couple of years ago. And a lady passed out, right? And they called, like, is there a doctor? And, you know, I raised my hand, like, I'm not a doctor. I didn't do this. But I started hobbling over. And there were about six of us. And it was funny because I look around and I knew one of the guys there. And he was a firefighter. I was like, oh, he could do this all day long. He's a paramedic, like,
right,
all day. I have a lot of advanced nursing and, like, you know, step down ICU experience. I'm like, I could do this. And the person holding this woman was this like 65-year-old family practice physician. Is like, oh God, like, shit, like that. This is. I always think of this.
What do I do? What
yeah,
do I
and
do?
It's like
she probably locked her legs out when she was standing up. Oh yeah, right, absolutely. But you, like we already know, it's when those grandmas come in after church because they passed out in the pew, right?
Or New Mexico, she's dehydrated and it's hot.
Right.
But the best part was is that I was sitting there and I told Tracy, I said, imagine you're on a plane and someone calls for a doctor and you show up and you're like, I'm not a doctor, I'm a nurse. And they're like, oh, no. And then I'm a physician. It's like, great. The patient's coding. And what kind of doctor are you? I'm an ophthalmologist. And it's funny how people would wrap. They're like, we're probably in better hands with the ophthalmologist. They went to medical school. It's like, I don't know. That nurse, if they had the right experience, that nurse will run circles around that person.
I mean, sure, if they had something impaling their eyeball, you'd be in great hands.
But if you're
on
an airplane and something impaled your eyeball, there's a question if the integrity of the plane is intact. And the pilot's a bigger problem there, right? But it's true. I mean, we think that I feel that people don't understand. And I would say family practice is very broad. Family practice,
Absolutely. They
are the studs in my mind because they know a little bit about everything. By and large, though, outside of family practice, physicians are rather specialized. They're extremely good at what they do. Mm-hmm. But if you ask a dermatologist what you should do about eyeball, they're going to say, I have no idea. Right. If you ask a GI doctor what they should do about an ear, they have no idea. Mm-hmm. And a nurse is not going to be a specialist, but the nurse's education is very broad. They bring a lot of really good tools to the table.
Absolutely. And we can, over time, become specialized in certain areas as well.
Sure.
So that dermatologist may have an NP or even a physician assistant who works with them. And ultimately, they have specialized in that. And so their skill set may have evolved and changed where they don't know as much. But they still have that generalized understanding of how things work within the body.
So I hope we've achieved our goal of the people listening, the many German fans that I have, of saying, okay, cool. Maybe nurses are a lot more educated and useful and important in the healthcare team than I realized. Next issue, why do you think nurses don't get the respect they deserve?
I think they don't get the respect they deserve because a lot of the time we're not looking at this as an interdisciplinary approach where we do need to have those intra-professional relationships with each other. We sometimes dog PAs. We sometimes dog physicians.
I think we've done that a little bit in this interview.
Right. Yeah. And yet at the same time, they also dog us. But why? We shouldn't be doing this. Ultimately, we need to take that approach and we need to be working with each other. And I feel that we're not getting some of that respect that we need because they don't have that broader understanding of necessarily our own backgrounds, where we're coming from, what we necessarily know.
You're saying other healthcare providers.
Absolutely. And you almost have to, like, I mean, for instance, in the emergency department, right? I had this physician. He was a hospitalist. We had an older patient who was coughing, right? And her primary care physician had prescribed her some lovely Chiritessin.
Heck yeah.
So we have cough syrup with codeine. Great.
Yeah,
her cough wasn't going away. Sure. So what did she do? Instead of reading the bottle and taking it accordingly, she took the whole bottle. So I have a grandma. I'm not even kidding you. Somebody, yes.
This is very Portland.
It is actually from Portland.
Yeah.
But she was on a Narcan drip. And she was not responding to our initial dose. And it took me getting respect from this hospitalist by being able to do that math and that calculation when I'm going to go up to the next dose in my brain. And being able to spew it out right there in the room instead of like, oh, hold on a second. Let me take a look. Like, I already knew what the calculation was because we were titrating this dose. So I had already planned ahead, if she's not responding, this is going to be my dose. And I was able to give that to him, which then led, I'm not even kidding you, to great respect. And I actually ended up treating this person as a patient after they had retired in my urgent care setting that was more a standalone emergency department. And I had that respect from being an ER nurse. But that's what it took. It took me being able to think ahead for me to get that respect that we deserve. And we deserve that respect whether or not we can think ahead or not.
Sure.
Ultimately, we are all trained in different ways, but we're trained to give the highest quality of care to our patients.
So I like that, where we have to start being, we have to start getting along. And I actually think that part of the reason that healthcare is falling apart is that the American Medical Association, for example, is so focused on whether or not NPs have full scope of practice. They are not focusing on the fact that the MBAs in healthcare are screwing us all over.
Oh, absolutely.
And
always have.
It's like stupid AMA, like fuck them. But I do feel a little bit, I don't feel like nurses are taught to respect their craft as much as physicians are. You know, I mean, physicians walk around like they're the hand of God. And they all, you know, they get their white coat and like put their degree on the wall, and they can't, you know,
you can do that too.
You can do that as a nurse, but nursing school, I don't think is taught that way. I think nursing school is taught a different way.
Absolutely.
Speak to us a little bit if you could.
Nurses in general, we're just taught on how to care for your patient.
Sure.
Right? How to listen to them, how to be able to sit there and actually hold a conversation with them, because that's what they need in that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you might be checking their vital signs and checking their urine output and clearing their dinner tray or what have you, but it's not a matter of you going in and you doing these things. It's a matter of sitting down and figuring out that person, that patient, who they are, what makes them tick, if you would, right?
Yeah.
Whereas everybody else, they're essentially taught that you're here to do a job and your job is to take care of this patient. And based on the latest research, this is what that algorithm looks like.
Sure.
And it's not necessarily taking that individual and putting them into that algorithm and how to get them the best outcomes.
Would you say that part of it is this hierarchy of care that you have physician parking, you have a physician's lounge, you have, you know, the physician has a little assistant, a scribe. They have special seats. You do not take their chair, whatever it may be. And do you think that part of that hierarchy is what keeps nurses down? Because nurses can either play in that hierarchy, and you see some of the older nurses do this, or you're at the bedside getting in the blood guts, and you can't play both.
Absolutely. You can't play both. But why can't you? We're not taught to respect ourselves. Until we're taught to respect ourselves, how will we gain the respect from others?
So you want to go into education. What would you tell your students?
I would tell my student that they're just as smart as anybody else out there. And they're there to take care of the patient for best outcomes. And in order to do that, they need to be able to have respect for themselves and respect for others within their team. That includes physicians, physician assistants, CNAs. I mean, how many times do we see that the CNA or the patient care tech have been dogged because they're not a nurse, right? And we see it by nurses.
Yeah.
They are part of that team. They're the one, I mean, I remember even as a CNA doing post-op vital signs on a young adult male who ended up having a GI bleed, had clips placed, and it was, I don't know, maybe like the third 15-minute vital sign check I was doing. And his vitals had been pretty stable, but he said, I have to go to the bathroom. Great. Here's your commode. Because, you know, you're post-op. You can't go to the bathroom just yet. And he's on the toilet for a while. And he was like, can you just check it now? You know, because he wanted to get back into bed. Bleeding. Sure. Oh, his blood pressure tanked. And it was frank red blood in that toilet.
Sure.
You know, who was it that ended up having to... then run out of the room, get the nurse. Nurse calls the physician. We ended up taking him to an ICU suite where it turns into an operating room so they could actually take care of this person's failed clips.
Yeah.
You know?
Bleeding and such.
But it's having that respect of that other individual because they're the one that caught it. If I was lazy and didn't do my job, right? If I was like, ah, that's not that bad.
I'm just do a my job. CNA,
right.
Care. It doesn't
right.
matter.
But it's having that respect for yourself to be able to go on to the next person in the hierarchy. Unfortunately, there still is that. And it's
what's interesting about this hierarchy is that it's funny because you think of all these other professions, right? And rarely do you get to know other people's jobs mm-hmm. when you're at a party. But if they're a doctor, maybe I'm biased, but I feel like they can't help but tell you, oh, I'm an ER physician. It's like, great. We're having hot dogs and hamburgers right now. If someone chokes, I'll tell you or that little Boy Scout over there. I mean, I feel like there is a social capital that physicians yeah. carry around that in but, my mind, I hate to say it. We think that medicine saves a lot of lives mm-hmm. and it's hygiene and vaccines.
Well, it's... You know, I beg to differ just a little bit.
I know, I'm super cynical about it, but...
Because genetics do play into it.
Sure.
And epigenetics, right? So we're going back three generations.
Sure.
And on top of that, it's also how you treat your body. We got one body.
Yeah, but...
You need to treat that body like it is gold,
but
right?
But here's the deal. You have...
But we live in America. And
America
we have a
with
sad
the
diet.
Most money spent on medicine.
Yes.
Probably the most medical... intense infrastructure, and we are one of the most unhealthy nations.
Yeah.
And so my idea of like, hey, these medical providers carry themselves with such clout. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's kind of interesting. We're not that healthy.
I think though that it also depends on the region in which you're in.
Sure.
It also depends on where that individual was trained.
Okay.
Because it does change. I mean, I came from the West Coast, and we all respected each other.
Would you argue,
on our team.
Would you argue that in the places in the U.S. with less of a medical hierarchy, you actually get better medical outcomes?
Absolutely. I mean, coming from Portland, Oregon, right? We look at, I was a stroke champion in the emergency department. So I was the nurse that educated the rest of the nurses on stroke and what our process was. And you have these goals that you have to meet, right? Like door to CT scan time
sure,
within
yeah.
a certain
whatever
time frame,
it
whatever
mm-hmm.
it is. But ultimately looking at that and then anytime that we had somebody coming in with chest pain.
You hit those
or abdominal pain, age 35 and up, they ended up having to have an EKG. That was our gold standard.
Sure.
Out here, we send somebody over to the emergency department for hypertension, right? Elevated blood pressure. And they should be getting an EKG because they could be causing strain on their heart and they may not be having any symptoms. And yet, how long did it take for them to get
sure.
that EKG, right? Like, how many
sure.
charts have you looked at of somebody that you've sent? And you're like, why hasn't this
yeah.
been done?
But,
or it doesn't get done at all. And then you're like, what is happening?
And to be fair, I mean, we don't know what's going on in the ER. Maybe
absolutely.
There are a ton of gunshots that are coming in.
Sure. Yeah.
But I do agree that the more you have a medical hierarchy, the less effective the medical process works. And,
absolutely.
And going back to kind of our original topic, I feel that the medical hierarchy disregards the very important players, CNAs, MAs, nurses.
Absolutely.
And if you cut them out of the team, it's just generals and you have no soldiers.
Right.
And it's like, you can't win a war like that. It's very dictatorial, like shitty military. Lots of generals and the
yes.
military actually sucks.
Yep.
And I think, kind of going back to what we originally talked about with COVID, kind of highlighted the valuable players in healthcare. In a sense, COVID was like a war. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden healthcare actually had to step up. It wasn't like, oh, my eyes itch, or it was like, oh my God, if we don't deliver healthcare, these people will actually die. It's not just making money for Pfizer.
Yes.
And what I think is so interesting is if you look at many battles, right, and you look at the way militaries are set up, it's not about how fancy the top brass is. It's not about the people at the top. It's about how well
the team works
together.
Yeah.
And the one of the last podcasts about archers and knights was mm-hmm. essentially that you had fewer resources from the English armies fighting the very prestigious hierarchical system of the French. And the French couldn't get over themselves and realize that you needed these foot soldiers and you need to actually help them out. And you see that right now. You see it all over the place. Effective military campaigns, you don't just have generals. It's not all about the medals. Right. It's about how well you use the troops in the field.
Correct. But not even how well you use them, but how well you work with them.
With them.
You are part of that team. Yeah. They are part of that team. And it is about how well and cohesive you can read each other.
Yep. Yep.
And if you're not reading each other, if you're not looking at the patient and seeing, oh, this is not good, and somebody else is like right there with you to help you with whatever your needs are, yeah, that patient could, yeah.
Yeah. And last military reference, promise. But I'm in the middle of a book about the Battle of Trafalgar.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially the British were trying to hold off the combined fleet between the French and the Spaniards. Napoleon's wanting to invade Britain. They have to clear the seas and then Napoleon can invade. And the British, what was very interesting is that the British, Admiral Nelson said, okay, here's the plan. But you guys, he's talking to his under captains, can function independently if this plan breaks up. Right? Because the smoke, it was hard to communicate and everything. So you had to figure out what to do. And the French and the Spaniards had more ships. They had bigger ships. They had fancier titles, like four last names and all this stuff. And it was funny because their system of executing the mission was very strict. The individual ships were not allowed to make decisions autonomously. They had to wait for the admiral to make the decision. When the battle commenced, the smaller British fleet went to town on the French and the Spaniards. Right. And so you had a good integration within the whole system, and you had a leader who respected the decisions that were made.
Those on the front line are able to see what exactly is happening and see how something is setting up, right?
Yeah.
And so they're able to make those decisions and take them to the higher command to assist in that decision making.
Like a nurse who feels comfortable calling a physician and saying, this is what I have.
Oh my gosh, talk about calling a physician.
it's scary, but even now it's very funny. Like where we are at now, hierarchy here is such that being a nurse practitioner with experience, I am nervous to call certain physicians because I don't want to do that. And as a result, the mission, whether it's military or patient, whatever it is, the mission falls apart.
Correct.
Whereas if I felt comfortable and I said, you respect me, I respect you, I'm in the trenches, you're in the...
Why are you calling me at 2:30 in the morning? Because your patient is grumping right now.
Exactly.
And you are not here, but I am, right? Learning hospitals, you call the resident. How many times has the resident said, ooh, I don't want to step on their toes?
Yeah.
Right? They are so afraid of that attending that they don't even want to contact them to figure out what to do.
Which begs the question is, what is medicine about at that point? Is it about the prestige and honor and the hierarchy, or is it about the patient? And
obviously not about the patient.
I would argue that you can't have both.
You
can't have a physician's lounge, a physician's chair, a physician's parking spot, and really good integration where the physician is not over other people. They already make disgusting amounts of money. You can't have both. You can't. And I would say you can't have both.
You can't.
I think we may have pissed off a lot. If physicians listen to this, which they probably don't because they don't respect nurse practitioners. But if they do, they're more than welcome to reach out and they can come on the show. But I think if any of them listened, they're probably a little upset. Like, that nurse practitioner, he doesn't know.
But I think that maybe they're upset because this is reality. This is where we're at in healthcare.
Sure.
Is if you cannot work with your own team,
yeah,
your team, including the CNAs and the nurses and PT, OT.
Sometimes the solution is the family's really having a hard time grieving for their dying person. We don't need all this bullshit. We need the trash shaken out.
Right.
The room is messy. Can you just take the trash out?
Right.
And if you can't respect all the members on that team,
absolutely,
that ship, that army, that hospital will not
nutrition who brings up a bereavement tray.
Yep.
You have to respect everybody that you work with.
Yeah.
If you don't, they don't respect you.
Yeah.
And that's when we see that our patient care outcomes actually
hence in the US we have very poor outcomes.
Absolutely.
And the best outcomes in healthcare, I would argue, are in the healthcare settings with the least hierarchy.
Yes.
Primary care.
Agreed.
Primary care. And if you go into the hospital where it's like, oh my God, the cardiothoracic surgeon, it's like, oh, they're useless. I need a chaplain. You know,
right.
You fall apart. All right. I think we're getting a little sidetracked. thank you for coming on the show. I want you to come back and talk a little bit about this because I think that there's a little bit more that nurses unfortunately shoot themselves in the foot.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't put their best foot forward.
Absolutely.
Asking for that respect. And we could talk about that. I don't want to get too sidetracked. Is there anything else you want to talk about before we close it up?
No.
No? You're good?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have fun?
Yeah.
Are you going to do it again?
Sure.
Okay, perfect. All right. So this is another episode of Better, Worse, or the Same. That was Christina Farrell. Christina Farrell, nurse practitioner, and I'm your host, Jason McNamara. Thanks for listening.